We got a quorum now. Representative Ruth made it, and her bill's going to be up first. No. We have some authors that have to go and present bills, and one at this committee, one at another committee, at the same time. So we're going to change the order a little bit. While they're doing that, Representative Nelson, I'm sure you've read the minutes for the last two meetings.
These are all part here.
There's three of them here. We got the minutes from the March 15th, 16th, and 17th. All in favor of approving those minutes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposing, same sign. Motion carries. Okay, welcome to your committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move House Files. Oh, wait, are you using the Senate file? I don't have my agenda yet.
I got House File 358.
House File 358.
You need a copy of the bill?
Be recommended to pass and move to the General Register.
Okay, very well.
And as you see, this is involving the county recorders, and in essence of time, I'm just going to go right to my testifiers, and so you can hear the testimony.
Welcome to our committee.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Kay Rookie. I'm the Martin County Recorder.
Familiar face.
I'm going to quickly talk about the consistency of this flat fee increase that we're doing. It is the uniform fee throughout the state of Minnesota, which eliminates add-on fees, additional page counts, 50 cent per lot fees on flats, and penalties for non-standard documents. The fee includes a technology fund for recorders to develop and maintain systems that improve document turnaround times and provide for electronic recording and updating our cumbersome back office paper systems. It will also provide for security of 150 years of recorded documents, which we maintain daily and are considered live documents. We continue to use those documents even though we consider them as archived documents. It will make it possible to provide for data services to our primary customers, the title companies, the bars, and the Bankers Association. It will allow us for internet capabilities and data integration between our county offices. The recorder's offices have not had a fee increase since 1991. We are a fee-based office, and we need to generate income to cover our expenses, such as our equipment, computers, our supplies, our maintenance agreements. Our maintenance agreements in 1991 were zero, and they're now $13,000 on average for a small county. We need to help our IT departments, which generally are small departments, and with the extra work that we're now doing with computerization in our offices, we rely heavily on those departments. We also need to look at our GIS systems and other systems that integrate us with our other county offices. We also have to budget for office space most generally, and most importantly, the jobs in our offices. The jobs in our offices are a higher level job. They're more technical, and when we hire employees, they do need to have skills and coming into these jobs. In 1991, these jobs basically came in at a starting pay of about $6.52. They had a week or two vacation, and it allowed for some family insurance with that. In 2004, that same position starts at $15.79 an hour. They get about 2 to 3 weeks of vacation, and again, it provides for insurance. And of course, you all know that insurance has increased approximately 10% per year. To have one single station in our offices in 1991 would have cost us $600 because we probably had a typewriter there. At present day, it probably costs $2,000 per station, and an office in my size, in my county, of about 22,000, we're looking at $2,000 per station, and I have 9 stations in my office for a small county, so you can imagine what the larger counties are doing. The turnaround times on that equipment basically is, we look at it between 3 and 5 years to upgrade those systems all the time, so there's a constant demand for new equipment and software and technology changes. Again, we are a fee-based office. We have not had a fee increase since 1991. We have a small equipment fund, but we are looking at a $9 increase for our technology fund, which could be justified in just the technology piece alone.
Okay. Mr. Chair, my name is Jeff Eakin. I'm the Wabasha County Recorder. When we were looking at this bill to have a statewide flat fee, I looked at my county and what factors are driving the recorder's office. As Kay had mentioned in her opening statement, we're a fee-based office. There's two main factors that generate the county recorder's office that are driving it, and those are labor costs and technology costs. Technology costs, the upfront cost is reasonable, but where you end up paying is the service agreements that you have to pay your vendors to maintain that hardware and that computer program. In my county alone, which is a county of about 21,000, labor costs since 1997 have gone up 71.4%. The technology costs, the service agreements in my county since 97, have gone up 179%. So if you factor in those two increases, those two factors that are driving the recorder's office, the demand for those two, the recording fee should actually probably be about $87. But we're just asking for a flat fee of $40. We think it's justifiable. If you look at being a fee-based office right now under the current bill or the current recording fee, in a county such as my size, the 34% of the tax property tax dollars have to help offset the cost of my office. With this bill, that drops down to 2%.
Okay. I have one question. There's a statute, 270-something, that says that we can't charge the state government more than the cost of doing whatever we're doing. Are we within that bounds? Does the cost of doing this for your customers justify what your increase is?
Yes, I believe it does.
That's important to know. I know there were things like the cosmetologists in Commerce were paying $1.5 million for one inspector. I thought that was a little skewed, so we changed that.
Mr. Chair, as Kay had mentioned earlier, I just want to mention one thing. The cost of inflation since 1991 has went up 42%, and we haven't adjusted our base recording fee. And one other thing I'd like to mention, there's other fees within this bill that we're also addressing. The recording fee hasn't been adjusted since 91, but some of the other fees in this bill have not been adjusted since 1985.
I'm glad to hear it wasn't from 1935, because when I go into the recorder's office in Martin County, she shows me all the old files and stuff, and I'm glad you got a raise since then. Representative Westerberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question as far as in Subdivision 2 there, it states, you know, that this is clarifying maybe language about fee restrictions, that no county may charge a fee other than one that's prescribed by law. Is that changing? You know, is that either fees that the county can charge currently? I'm sorry, I don't know. And is this taking that away?
Yes, it is, Mr. Representative. The problems that we're having, and that's why we brought forth this bill, is the inconsistency of recording fees throughout the state of Minnesota. My county might be charging $19.50, where another county might be charging $34 with all of these add-on fees, such as a mail-in fee, a processing fee, all sorts of other fees that they can dream up. They tack that onto the recording fee. And what this bill is doing is it's eliminating it. They can no longer do that.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Westbrook,
have the counties weighed in on this as far as what's their opinion on the particular bill then?
Mr. Chair and Representative, we do have support from the counties, AMC, which is the County Commissioners Association, and we do have their support on this bill. the add-on fees have really convoluted how our customers file documents. We don't just get customers in the state of Minnesota. We have customers throughout the United States, and we're getting more and more customers throughout the United States, and they don't know what to pay for our fees. And it causes some turmoil as far as rejection of documents. Once they submit a document and it's not the correct amount of money, we have to reject it. That is in statute. So when we reject it, it slows up their process, and it could affect many mortgages and title issues. So we have support from the Commissioners Association, from all of our related associations, Auditor Treasurers, Recorders Association, and the Bar Association and the Realtors Association, and the title companies, our main customer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have to say that I've only glanced at the bill, and this is a kind of a, yesterday in my last committee, we had a lot of rhetorical questions and rhetorical answers, so maybe this is rhetorical, and maybe you can give me a rhetorical answer. On page 3, lines 22 through 27, you talk about this fee does not diminish any the duties of the county to furnish fundings for expenses and personal necessities. How are you going to enforce that, Representative Ruth? Because we're famous around here for saying that this is just a supplemental cost, and we're just adding in money, and then lo and behold, a couple years later, that the state's part of the funding or goes down. So I can't imagine if we do it, the counties don't do it. I'm just wondering how you're going to enforce that part of it.
Representative Ruth.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney. Number one, before we get into that, and then I'll let our experts talk on that. But remember, these are our county recorders. It's your county recorder. It's your county recorder. And we're trying to standardize the rate. And we feel this is extremely fair. There are some that are paying the $19.50, but then when we add on all the extra charges, we're finding that the $40 fee that we're looking at is very reasonable. There are some that are over $100. So some are going to be taking a less amount in per month. But anyway, so just put in mind, remember that it's your county recorder that we're trying to help. We're trying to standardize these fees.
So
that we all understand it. But okay, and I'll let you answer the question.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Ray.
Representative. We have created in this a turnaround time, and we need to, we worked with the Bar Association on this and the title companies. And what this does, it creates some standards for us, and it's an amendment to the bill. We are all in agreement with it, and we need to present to the county board yearly what our turnaround times are and that we have made those turnaround times. This gives us, as county recorders, some avenue to go to our county boards and say, this is how our office operates. The cost of interest rate has gone down. We're getting more documents in. We may need more staff. We may need more equipment. And this gives us now an avenue to do that. So we have created some more standards and restrictions on what we do, but it also gives us that opportunity to go to our county boards and to address this issue.
Representative Mahoney.
I guess I got a rhetorical answer.
Okay. I was waiting.
Here's my question. The fund, this shall not be construed to diminish the duty of the county governing body to furnish funding for expenses and personal necessity in the performance of this duty. Now, you're standardizing. Sometimes you'll get more money, some will get less. I mean, this is nice language. Is this comfort language? I guess is the question I'm asking. Because it's certainly government, unfunded mandates or whatever you want to call them, I can just see this one as the county, whether it's my county or your county or anyone else's county around this table, going, oh, well, you guys, collected in this equipment deal $10 for every document that you recorded. You've got $500,000 in there. We're just not going to give you any money this year because property taxes are going up and this and that. You'll just have to use whatever you can. How are you going to keep your counties from saying, Jesus, nice that you got an extra balance. Why don't you go ahead and use it for something other than what it's designated for in here? And if it's just comfort language, that's all I want to know.
Ms. Recky is pretty tough. She'll probably break the right index finger if they pick that one.
Mr. Chair, okay, Representative. There is also another statute that requires the county board to supply our offices with the necessities that we need to maintain and run our office. So there is a related statute that refers to just the operational costs of our office to maintain our office. So there is, besides that wording, this is just some more strength in that says that, you know, it's just, yeah, it's comfort language. It's just one more push to make sure that they follow those.
Mr. Chair, it would be really nice if you recorders would come back and tell us if that's happening so that, you know, we can calculate that in our thoughts about how the job gets done of governing. I'll just leave it at that.
Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I think one other point that we want to have brought out here today is that there are several counties, and Steele County is one of those, where the county has to end up picking up the tab and has been paying the dollars because we've been, the recorders just are not getting the fee that they have needed in all these years. And so that is another stress in our counties. When we talk a lot about how we don't want to keep putting the stress back on our counties, and this is one of those. So with your help today, you can help your county. So we'd appreciate your support.
Representative Wilkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe to Ms. Ruck, I'm sorry I came in late, so I missed some of the testimony, and the gentleman doesn't look to be Janine or Lucy who were on the... I don't know your name, sir. But I just wanted to make sure that this bill, there's nothing in this bill that kind of conflicts with what Representative Vanderveer is doing in his bill on electronic filing, that none of the fees that affect the... I'm not sure if these affect that task force or not, but make sure there's no conflict between the two bills.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, there is no conflict between the two, but the technology that we do in our office puts us in a position to be able to electronically record. So as counties, we are already funding that avenue for electronic recording. My office is already in a system, a validated system, that could electronically record if we were allowed to throughout the state of Minnesota. So we have put funding into that already, just on our own merit, but that bill is not affected in any way, or is this still affected by that?
Great. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Any more? Well, Representative Westerberg.
Just, Mr. Chair, was there a fiscal note done on this bill?
It's in your packet, I believe. The fiscal note is zero, but we're increasing a fee, so it has to go through a finance committee, the way I understand it.
Correct. Mm-hmm. That's correct, Mr. Chair. It does not affect the state.
Thank you. You're welcome. Any other questions about House File 358. Seeing none, Representative Ruth renews her motion to have House File 358 pass and go to the General Register. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We have House File 1034, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move House File 1034 for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill.
Very well. I must be getting old. I recognize all the testimony.
Absolutely. Mr. Chairman, I have an author's amendment.
Very well, I see that.
I'd like to move the A05-0393 amendment.
Very well, you want to describe your amendment?
Mr. Chairman, the previous bill as it drafted contained only current appropriations. This is a delete all that will provide for annual appropriations. It still contains Section 2, which is actually the increase in the rate for reimbursement for extended employment providers.
Okay. Any questions about the amendment 393? Representative Nelson.
The fiscal note that you have here that doesn't reflect the increased fee or the increased cost.
Representative Bravo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, that is correct. This the fiscal note is not in alignment with the new drafting.
Any other questions about the amendment? Representative Garavolo renews his motion to have Amendment 393 be passed and included in his bill. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Bill should be the way you want it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members of the committee. House File 1034 will focus on two requests. Number one is an increase in the annual appropriation for extended employment. And number two is an increase in the rate of reimbursement to extended employment providers. The extended employment program is a state-funded program. And with us today is the chair of the statewide Minnesota Association of Rehabilitation Organizations, Barb Arnold. She is also the CEO of Accessibility in St. Paul, Minneapolis, and she'll provide us with a program overview, and we'll introduce you to an employer and a client who are personally familiar with the extended employee program. So. Good morning.
Good morning. Would you give me your name for the record?
Good morning, and thank you, Mr. Chair and representatives. My name is Barb Arnold. And my job today, this morning here, is to inform you about the extended employment program. Extended employment puts people with severe disabilities to work and provides the support service they need to retain that work. Over 14% of Minnesota's working age adults have a disability. There are many programs that support people with disabilities, and I can see sometimes it's very easy to seem that they all blend together. But I'd like to make sure that we understand here today that extended employment is a very unique program targeted for a specific group of individuals. To understand who they are, it might be helpful to understand who they're not. Many individuals have developmental disabilities. These are disabilities that have been with them a good part of their lives, and these individuals are supported by federal and state funding through the Department of Human Services. Others have disabilities that have occurred a little later in life or been detected later in life, and many of these people seek services through the state vocational rehabilitation program where they receive the necessary short-term services that connect them with jobs. The people that EE is designed to help are those that fall through the system. They are not qualified as developmentally disabled, and they are not able to retain work on their own. They need ongoing services. The primary disabilities of these individuals include mental illness, learning disabilities, physical disabilities, and some brain injuries. Extended employment providers cover the entire state of Minnesota. There are 29 of us, and last year we provided work for over 6,500 individuals with severe disabilities that require ongoing support. Through our work with business partners, we provided over 5.3 million hours of work last year. It's our success that's rooted with the development of strong business relationships throughout our local communities that has really given us these results. We provide a valuable workforce and workforce solutions to meet these businesses' needs. Many of our partners are small businesses, startup companies, for whom we play the role of incubators of their businesses. Often, ours is the first workforce they have. We offer work teams that provide flexibility to handle surges in business flow, seasonality of businesses. We provide value-added services that augment their core businesses. Last year, MACRA members contributed over $100 million in business services to the state economy. EE leverages these business services to help cover the overall cost of the program. However, the appropriation we get from the state, which covers about 20% of the cost of the program, is the most critical to our existence. This funding is utilized to provide the case management and the ongoing support services that are the backbone of the program. The state funds that EE providers receive are only paid on a very strict case of performance basis. The clients are placed by us into the jobs. The businesses pay for their wages, and we are reimbursed, we as providers are reimbursed based on the hours they worked and the fact that they earned a wage. So it's a real great return on investment for our state. Individuals will require less public assistance. They will be contributing taxpayers. They will be happier and healthier individuals. Representatives, these individuals want to work. They are able to work. They need ongoing support to work. We're here to provide that support, and we hope you will give us the support to help us accomplish our efforts. Mr. Chair, if it pleases the Chair, we would like to hear from all of our speakers first before proceeding with questions.
Very well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We now would like to show a short video, and it's produced by a local TV station for one of our members. I'm very privileged to hear every day what the jobs that we are creating mean in the lives of people, and I'm sure this is going to give you an opportunity to feel the same things I do.
You see how good your lobbyist is with technology.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. Ms. Osterman informed me that if I wanted the DVD to work, all I had to do was press play. And then she actually came over and said, this one, and pointed at the button that said,
okay.
Don't talk to your father.
You're right, there is no play button.
Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering if Representative Garofalo needs help with a computer.
I was thinking the same thing. He's a systems. I saw a flicker. Did you check the plug?
Yeah, it's playing right now and we don't know it all.
Here he is. But what's this?
Yeah.
Never going to live that one down. Mr. Chairman, this is a... Oh, is that...
Is there? Come on. Yeah.
Is there audio?
Are you happy at your job? Well, these two guys I'm going to introduce you have 10 jobs between the two of them. And let me tell you, they're more than happy to go to each and every one of them. And they belong to an organization called PROACT, and that's coming up next on this In Your World segment.
Today is another working day for Adam and Gerald. Their days start like most other people's. They wake up in the morning, they get ready for work, work they enjoy.
It's a messy job, but I gotta do it, though.
This is where things get a little different. You see, these two have quite the work ethic. You know, it's not out of the ordinary to hear that someone has more than one job. But when you hear that Adam has 6 jobs, and Gerald works 4, well, that certainly makes you raise an eyebrow. We're not equating you with these two because they work an uncommon amount of jobs, but the reasons we are letting you get to know them are actually uncommon. Uncommon and unique in the way that they obtain their jobs. Uncommon and significant is how they perform their jobs in a way that is both a little different and maybe a little more noble than you and me.
I like everything nice, and I like this job.
You see, these two easygoing and hardworking fellows work their jobs having disabilities. The reason these two men and others in similar situations now have jobs and earn their very own paychecks is made possible because of an organization called PROACT.
PROACT provides employment opportunities for individuals with disabilities. We help them find employment in the community as well as in our industrial-based workforce. My particular job as the employment manager is to provide opportunities in the community for employers to utilize our clients in work settings.
Well, I take the box and put it away after it's done. We got to put it on a skid.
PROACT provides some very large companies with their employees or clients. Businesses such as Smead Office Supply, and other businesses such as
Minnesota Valley Humane Society, Panera Bread Company, Sam's Club, the City of Apple Valley Parks and Recreation Department, Midwest Coca-Cola Bottling Company, Dakota Electric Association.
Their list of employers goes on and on.
They come to us and they choose ProAct. And then our job is to find out their skills, abilities, interests, and try to get a match of that with an employer, put those two together and support them.
The workers ProAct provides are supported by placing human service technicians or site supervisors at the worksite. Their role is to ensure that the duties of the job agreed upon in a contract with the employer are completed, as well as providing supervision, training, and job coaching to the employees on the crew.
I am happy today.
They're very extreme hard workers, and they really take pride in everything that they do.
I like everything. It's good for me. I like it. It's good for me. I like everything.
I think for many of the individuals we're working with, their level of pay is almost secondary. It is more about dignity, self-worth, kind of feeling that they're contributing to their own care, etc. And I think that that's more important than the level of pay, even far more important.
I am happy today. I am happy Patty working with me.
Yeah.
And happy about you.
Yeah.
How is Echo Service help me for a job working with me and help everybody out?
It ain't a bad job here. This way.
I put a name on my back in the closet.
So the next time you are complaining about your job, try thinking about things from the perspective of Adam and Gerald. Try being grateful for what you have and what you are able to do. Nothing is more honorable than a grateful heart.
I am happy, Ben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to now call a business partner up with us. Marty Shimko is from U.S. Bank, and he's going to speak about what expand employment means to him.
Mr. Shimko, give your name for the record so people will know you were here 100 years from now.
Pardon?
Give your name for the record so people will know you were here 100 years from now.
My name is Marty Shimko, and I'm a branch manager at U.S. Bank over on Lake in Chicago. And I became aware of the partnership with Goodwill Easter Seals because they officed in my building and they helped people find jobs. I also became aware of a program that they had which was called Bank Skills Training, where they would take people and train them on the basics of banking so that they could become employees. Trying to find good employees is always a challenge. And so I turned to them, and with me being inner city, I have a very large immigrant base. I was looking for people who spoke different languages. The difference between Goodwill Easter Seals and the other support agencies that I turned to is kind of like the farmer who takes the seed and throws it out in the field and hopes he gets lucky and it's going to grow. Working with Goodwill Easter Seals, they made sure that the ground was cultivated. They hung around to make sure that the seed, as it took off, that we avoided the weeds and etc. Case in point, as I was working with employees and we had some challenges in our country, when we say we need you to be at work at 8:45, we mean 8:45. We don't mean 9 o'clock-ish because, you know, time is a little different. If the bus is going to run a little bit slow, we still need to have you here. With Goodwill Easter Seals, their caseworkers would meet with the participant and help them to look at the challenges that face them and also help them overcome them. Many people did not have computer skills. They would work with them to understand the computer, also know how the program was. A year ago or 2 years ago, we converted to a new computer system, and so it was a big challenge for all of us. For my participants, the people from Goodwill Easter Seals came in, sat down with the participants. They actually learned how to work the program and then shared that knowledge and taught them. During the first initial week of the new program, they sat behind the teller so that then when the teller had questions, they were there. When the customers were asking them things and the person would become a little nervous, they helped them overcome that fear, put them at a little bit of a rest there with that. Some of the success in this is the fact that when the bus strike happened, I had participants who walked to work 2 miles every day and walked home and were never late. I had a participant who, because of the coaching that she got, she ended up being a leader in our district for being able to sell additional products to employees and receive the recognition. And the part that's so fantastic about this is that very same participant is now going and getting a college degree. She never thought she could have done it before. But with their support and their encouragement for me as an employer, she's a fantastic employee. She's going to increase her value for us as well as for her community. So for us, this has been just huge. And so I appreciate it, and I know that with their help, we can continue to grow.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, we now have a consumer of EE Services, Josh Marks, who would like to come up and introduce the committee.
Welcome, our committee.
Let's speak to the committee.
Good morning. I'm Josh, and it's just such a thrill and an honor to be able to give a discourse on how fitting Goodwill is in supporting people that have both disabilities or disabilities. Goodwill started for me a long way back. I used to play football, and my first replica football helmet was purchased at a Goodwill years ago. And it was displayed proudly in my childhood home. As growing up in my early 20s, a friend of mine tried to assure me of the fact that Goodwill is a good place to start when you want to get back on your feet. And the training is unequaled, really. The environment is conducive to goal achievement, and I've noticed that firsthand. I started my goal training in 1998 and has extended to the present. The bus rides when I was on my way to Goodwill years ago helped me to meet friends, meet co-workers, and decide on what career path I wanted to take. After having trained at retail sales at Goodwill, Easter Sales, Target is another play that they've connected me with. And so for the last 7 years, I've been working at Target. And if it weren't for Goodwill supporting me with the support that I needed and encouragement, I would have not been able to continue to work my position. I guess what I'm trying to say is, with Goodwill, there's times in the past where the stress has been high or my mental health condition has been hard, and Goodwill has been right there to support me. They've supported me to the extent that most jobs that I carried or held before Goodwill Easter Seals was about 4 months in duration. After working with Goodwill Easter Seals, the current job I have, I've been there for 7 years at Target. And, you know, there's been times where I thought that Target and I were done and we were going to part our ways, but the fortunate thing was is that there's Goodwill workers that came alongside to help me and encourage me and bring me further on than I thought I could go. And that's the thing that I like so much about Goodwill. It's been 7 years at Target, and I couldn't have done it without the support of the people here at Goodwill.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Chairman, that concludes our testimony. We'll stand for questions right now.
Okay. Representative Gizelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Arnold, tell me what would happen if we didn't have this program to the people that it helps. And I've got a couple questions related to that.
Mr. Chair, Representative. Many of the individuals that are in our program live independently, live with aging parents, take care of aging parents. A lot of them wouldn't be able to afford to keep their housing up. A lot of them would end up in the system. They'll end up in the system somewhere, whether it be in the welfare programs, in hospitals, on the street, in a vicious circle of trying to go back and forth into the system to find a job. They're less healthy. They don't have the money for their meds. Most of these individuals are in some type of medication, so their mental health situations will deteriorate. It's a costly alternative.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Arnold, I just want to make sure I understand, too. When it talks about extended employment services, are those third party where the deed works with another group like Goodwill or whoever to help these people?
Mr. Chair and Representative, many of the referrals that we get do come through the Vocational Rehabilitation Program or through rehabilitation services. Mm-hmm. Individuals that come to them and they realize that they are not going to be able to put them into employment with their short-term programs, that these individuals need supported employment. So we do refer them to us. We also get referrals from the veterans. We get disabled veterans. We get referrals from parents and word of mouth. But a good deal of our programs, we work in conjunction with rehabilitation, state rehabilitation services.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, I met a group in the Brainerd area where I'm from. The name escapes me, but they worked with DEED, but they were a private nonprofit, I believe. And is that the type of program that works with this? Am I understanding that correct? They basically help find jobs for people like we saw in the video and help, you know, this supplemented basically what they did. Am I understanding that correct, that this is part of that program?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not sure what program that is, but it's very likely that is a program similar to a part of this here extended employment network.
Finally, Mr. Chair, it worked. That's what I really liked about it. It really worked, and I hope we can find a way to make this fit into the dollars we have, but it definitely worked.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it works. The numbers are there, and the investment for our state is just great.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, more of a comment than a question. I'd like to thank Representative Garofalo for carrying this. I've had some exposure to these programs, too, specifically PROACT, who was in the video, used to be in my district until redistricting. But I've kept in touch with Steve Dischler, who was in the video, and they do an extremely good job. I can't tell you how good it is to have people employed for their own dignity and for their overall mental health, and it does incredible things that no drug or any other thing can do. It gives them a real sense of worth. The program's extremely effective. I know a lot of employers in my area that contract with PROACT, and I believe LifeWorks might be another one too that participates in this. So just want to express support for the program.
Okay. Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's no question about being sold on the value, and I think you can hear that from everyone, and I've had personal experience in myself. And you've sort of attested again to that about the value of this. But what I want to get is a little bit beyond that, because we're being asked, it looks like here, to increase funding by a pretty substantial amount. So the question is more related to, please help me understand how these kind of numbers were arrived at. Probably start with one thing I'm interested in is what the base funding currently is. But then sort of the logic behind the amount of the increase and what that increase is going to buy.
Mr. Chair, I can take the one question regarding current base funding, and then I'll let Ms. Arnold take the rest. The current base funding is $11.7 million.
Is that, excuse me, Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, is that per year or biennium?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, Representative Bradley, on an annual basis.
Annual, okay.
Okay, Ms. Arnold.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bradley, the extended employment program, I know like many other programs, has not seen increases for years. Over the last 15 years, there's been two small increases for this program. However, a lot of the other support that we've been getting, county funding, is actually going away. So all of the support funding that we have to carry this is decreasing. We're becoming more and more dependent just on the business services. The funding that is needed here is for that individual support, beyond the job support, the case management. The salaries are being taken care of by the business partners, but it's the people that are needed to be able to give this ongoing work and to get people to and from jobs. So we've had enormous increases in transportation costs. We've had enormous increases in our staffing and health costs over the years. And this is, it would take 35% just to get us caught up with inflation. So what we're looking at is, and we have a lot of organizations that have so much invested from a mission standpoint in these individuals that we've been carrying the program as long as we can. And I am really nervous that we are in jeopardy in some areas of people not being able to continue to offer extended employment. So basically, as an organization, we have sat down and looked at what is the losses that we're incurring right now, what would be needed to bring this to a healthy state, and that's where the funding number has come from, the $3.2 million. Another part of this, though, is asking for a rate increase, because if we were to get another $3 million without a rate increase, we'd just be losing money at a faster pace. So we really, we are looking at trying to maintain the solvency of this effort to continue offering the services, and the $3.2 million would help us not have to reduce any of the services, any of the numbers that, of people that we're serving.
Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Arnold, unless I'm mistaken, I believe the delete all changed the number pretty significantly. And it's not 3.2 anymore. It's about $8 million in each year of the next biennium from the general fund, and then about $7 million from the Workforce Development Fund. And I don't know if these are comparable, but you just mentioned 3.2, and that was in the original bill.
Yes. Chairman,
Representative Bradley. Originally, when legislation was crafted, it was just for that increase. It didn't include the appropriation. If we take the 7.9 million and the 6.9 million and total it up, you'll see that that is 3.2 million more than the baseline of 11.7 that we cited earlier.
Okay. Representative Brown. Sure, I don't want to belabor it here. I mean, I understand the value. I guess I'm trying to invite from you, and if you could follow up for me, I would just like to have a better breakdown of what that additional, then, if it's 3.2 additional, what it's really going to buy. And then secondly, you're calling for about a 35% increase in the reimbursement rate also. And just a little bit of information of background. I mean, you sort of gave me the general logic, but I would like sort of a mini spreadsheet, not too complicated, but just take me through the 3.2. What is it actually filling? If it's filling an inflation hole, that's one part of it. If it's doing something more, that's another part of it. But just a little more breakdown to help us understand that.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Bradley, it is primarily filling an inflation hole. I think that we will see improved outcomes coming also as we address be able to run with the appropriate funding for the services that we're providing. But basically, we have extended employment program as a moving program in most of the organizations from a bottom line standpoint. So we are just trying to get it to a healthy state and to keep it functioning in our state.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
Mr. Chairman, in closing, I'll just offer just a quick comment that I had the privilege of visiting the PROACT facility earlier this year, and I've heard other members of this committee state the importance of going out into the community and visiting these sites and seeing them in action. And I'm trying to think of an articulate way of saying this, but it's pretty cool. It's pretty neat visiting these places and seeing them in action. And I know that we're going to have a target and we're going to have a limited budget with our committee, but this is a with the finite resources we have available to us, I think this is a pretty sound investment, and the members of this committee can feel confident supporting it.
Thank you very much. I agree. I often think, what is the cost of not having organizations like this, and not only in people, but in dollars for the state? And I think
is something we have to consider. I was glad you weren't asking for $797,957,000 more. I don't know where I'm going to find the other, but certainly you are lobbying the governor. I know that, knowing the lobbyists you have. But I also have been in several facilities MRCI has. I see Pam, you're back there, and you can see the work of macro organizations all over the marketplace in the packaging and piecework that they do. Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chair, to that point, maybe with a little staff help here, because it seems like I've seen it in both ways. I know that I've got one that's going to be coming up where all we showed in the bill was the extra, because if it was already in base, why would we even have to mention that? And I'm a little confused about this approach as versus the original bill. It seems like the original bill would be the normal way you'd construct this, but any advice from staff?
Mr. Chairman, I think it's just a matter of how the drafting request comes to the revisor's office. Sometimes it's in addition to or added to the base, and sometimes we do see it this way. I think the more common way is it's added to the base, but I think it's just how the instructions come to the revisor's office.
Either way, I think we all know what it is now. Thanks to you. Any other questions from members? With that, Representative Garavolo.
I renew my motion to have House File 1034 considered for possible inclusion.
As amended.
As amended for omnibus bill.
Well, all in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Cypher's here. Y'all ready?
Morning, Mr. Chair.
Morning, Representative Seifert. I will move House File 1651 for possible. Where do you want this to go? Is that inclusion of the omnibus bill?
Mr. Chair, that's probably what we'd have to do, just lay it over.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, good morning. Mr. Chairman, members, I am excited about the presentation you're going to have today. We're going to try to be brief, but the main job of this committee is to create jobs, private sector jobs that help create a tax base, more wealth in this state, and by doing it in the most economic way possible. And for years and years and years, this committee funded the Minnesota Inventors Congress. It's an office out of Redwood Falls that helps people navigate through the process of inventing things, getting patents, linking up with manufacturers. They started in the 1950s. There's a chart that members will be getting or do have here that has some yellow lines on it that actually gives you jobs that are going on right now that are identified, but all the other, there are inventions that have been created in manufacturing now that we don't have the exact numbers on, because I asked for this chart because I think the members of the committee would like to see what are some jobs that have been created, and but not for this organization would not be in the state of Minnesota, would not be in existence. As testified by the people who were helped by the Inventors Congress, and this isn't the Redwood Falls Inventors Congress, a majority of the people who have benefited from the office and linking up with manufacturers, patents, advice, etc., are out of my legislative district. They are in Owatonna, Representative Ruth. They are in St. Paul, Representative Mahoney. They are in Grove City. They are in Mankato. They are spread all over the state. And in some of the cases with inventions that had taken place many years ago, you'll see the Rollite trailer from one of our original shows back in the 50s with 1,000 employees now. We have everything from the bean rider, for those of you who grew up on farms and you remember bean riding to spray those weeds, that started out there. For those of you who golf, there's been a couple different inventions relating to golfing. For example, right now for you regular members who go to the golf course, you take your golf bag with your golf clubs and you try to load them into your car, angling, you know, sideways, or get a station wagon or pickup. So this guy had an idea that why wouldn't you want to screw the top off and screw it apart and have an area for your balls and just have a little suitcase, and then you can go golfing without your big clunky So people need to think about these things, and they don't know what to do. Once you have an idea, what do you do? The going crazy board game, some of you have heard of that. That's taken off a lot in production in North and South Dakota, purchases and so forth. But we've got an enormous amount of jobs that have come out of this. The appropriation used to be $75,000 a year. We're asking for $50,000 a year to keep the consulting office going. We've kept it going on a local basis for the state of Minnesota, basically, but to have my local business people and chamber people to be scraping for pennies under the couch to take care of inventors across the state, which was a state responsibility, I'm not sure that's right. And this wasn't from the 2003 reductions. This was actually before. And we've kept it going, but members, I would tell you, but not for this organization, I have a fairly high threshold, as many of you know, for spending government money. And for the little investment that it takes for us to foster invention and free enterprise to create private sector jobs, which is what this committee is all about, I don't think we're asking for a whole lot, and we've got a lot to offer. I now have, with the help of the Inventors Congress consultants, I have a manufacturer of hearses and limousines in my district now. And do you have that handout for that? And you'll talk about that a little bit. But can you imagine if you wanted to start a car manufacturer? You woke up one night and this was a dream of yours. What would you do? We need most people just give up. And I think fostering the entrepreneurial spirit is something that we're all about here. So I'm going to turn over to Ray and Julie. They're going to introduce themselves and their title. We've got a couple inventors here. They're going to talk to you for a couple minutes about some of the help they got and some of the things they're working on. And I think the committee will be excited to hear this. So I'll turn it over, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome to our committee. Give your name for the record. I think, were you here 9 years ago?
Yes, I've been here before, Mr. Gunn.
I kind of remember listening to this presentation quite a few times. I've always promised myself I was going to go. I haven't made it yet. I look forward to being here.
This would be a great year. Mr. Chair and representatives, my name is Raymond Waltz. I've been a volunteer member of the Minnesota Inventors Congress for 28 years. When I moved to Redwood Falls, I saw the Inventors Congress. I went to the show, and the first thing that struck me is the economic development potential of the show. The economic development potential for this show is phenomenal, and we've really not tapped into it, in part because we're doing it with volunteers and with limited funds. The reverse of that is we've had a tremendous amount of success with those inventors we've been able to impact. Now, we're working with volunteers. We're a volunteer nonprofit organization. And as Representative Seifert said, since 1986, we had funding to help us with that. What we were able to do with that funding was to take it from a 3 or 4 day annual show with limited help for inventors throughout the year and expand that and maintain a year-round office. We were able to then set up a website and provide information to inventors through a year-round and send out information packets. The primary help we provide to inventors is that we provide them a reliable source of information. A major impact for our inventors is that we can keep them from the promoters who take money from them. The Federal Trade Commission ran a study in connection with a lawsuit several years ago. And over a 2-year period, they studied 5,291 different inventors who had paid money to an invention promotion firm. Over that period of time, they paid $46 million. The number of inventors who received more money back from this than they paid in, 8 inventors. A percentage of 0.01545%. A very abysmal amount. So not only do we provide economic development assistance, but we also provide some consumer protection. I'd like to introduce now for you a classic story of the impact that we can have on an inventor. I introduce for you Mr. Jerry Ford from St. Charles.
Welcome to our committee, Mr. Ford. Give your name for the record, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and representatives. My name is Jerry Ford. I would like to speak to you today about the need of getting the funding reinstated for the Minnesota Inventors Congress. Myself and many others feel this organization is not only important to our great state, but also has impact on the rest of the country, and in some instances, the whole world. It was brought to my attention about a year ago by my son Zach, who works in a nursing home, about the ongoing problem of serious injuries caused by rollaway wheelchairs, some of which have led to complications that in some instances have resulted in death. The problem occurs when a person is using a wheelchair, entering or exiting the chair, and forgets to apply the manual brakes for a number of reasons, such as those living with Alzheimer's disease, dementia, memory loss, and in some cases just plain forgetting to apply the brakes. My son told me there was a great need for some type of automatic braking system that automatically applies the brakes when a person in the chair starts to exit the chair and automatically releases the brakes when the person is seated in the chair for the chair to move freely. I asked Zach if he could get me a wheelchair to work with because I had an idea that I thought would work. A few days later, Zach brought me a wheelchair, and I built a brake system from the idea in my head. No drawings, no plans, just an idea in my head. One Sunday morning, from start to finish, in about 3 hours, I had a working automatic brake system. The first time I tried it, I thought this could turn into something big. My first thought was I needed a patent attorney. Monday morning, I got in touch with an attorney and got my idea secured in a provisional patent. I needed an inexpensive way to find out what kind of value and need my invention had. Luckily, I was told by a friend, Bill Davis, about the Minnesota Inventors Congress held in Redwood Falls, Minnesota. I contacted the Minnesota Inventors Congress. I wanted to reserve a booth at their show for my invention. Their staff was very friendly and helpful. Before and during the show, they showed genuine interest in my invention. I had the most overwhelming response, more than I could have ever imagined. I ended up winning 4 awards with my invention, which I am told is the most awards ever won on one invention in that prestigious competition's 47-year history. I truly feel that if not for the Inventors Congress, I would not have had the competence and time and money to put into the invention that I have. I'm a farmer and I literally bet my farm on this invention. I'm glad to say everything is working out extremely well. I have came up with 2 other spin-off inventions from my first system. Those will be going to the Inventors Congress this year along with the latest updates on my first invention. I plan to attend the Inventors Congress every year for years to come, maybe not always as an inventor, but just to see the other great ideas that are brought there by other inventors. I also told the staff that I would like to look into presenting some type of an award to other inventors in my company's name just to show the kind of appreciation I truly have for their organization. I truly believe I owe much of the success I'm having to them. I feel I'm living the American dream. I've started my own company making products that I invented and have filed patents and trademarks on. My daughter Regina already works for me as my office manager, and I plan to bring my sons Zach and Jeremy into the business soon. I was told by many that my products would more than likely be manufactured offshore because of the cost of manufacturing. My answer to that was, not as long as I own the company. I plan to keep my company right here in our great state of Minnesota where it belongs. The Minnesota Inventors Congress is only one of only 2 of these competitions in our entire country. Let's not lose this valuable resource that our great state has simply due to the lack of relatively small amount of funding needed. I believe my company will have a very large economical impact on our great state and could bring national and even worldwide attention to our state. I believe this invention is going to save a lot of money for Medicare, Medicaid, insurance companies by preventing serious injuries, and I think it will have a very large economic impact on the state. Thank you, Mr. Chair and representatives. At this time, I'd like to have the Vice President of my company, Bill Rokamp, say a few words about the economical impact.
Thank you. Welcome to our committee. Give your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and representatives. My name is Bill Rokamp. It's an honor to be in front of your committee today to talk about a great organization, the Minnesota Inventors Congress, that has helped bring so many good ideas to reality and to the marketplace. I guess, first of all, I'd like to tell you just a little bit about myself. I'm a dairy farmer from Monona County. down in the southeastern part of the state. You might be wondering, what does the dairy farmer know about the Inventors Congress? Well, up until last year, I didn't know anything about it. Jerry and I have been friends, pretty much lifelong friends, and he brought this invention, this first wheelchair, over to the farm one day, and I just couldn't believe it. I mean, it's just amazing what this thing can do. And as Jerry told you, he got the idea of going to the Inventors Congress convention, and he asked Jean and I, my wife, if we'd like to go along. And I said, heck, we didn't have any plans for that weekend, so sure, why not go up to Jackpot Junction, have a little fun, and go see what this Congress is all about. Boy, am I glad I went. I was just amazed at the number and the variety of inventions, the people that were there. I mean, there's people there from coast to coast. People say that, you've probably heard this before, all the good ideas, have been taken. But you need to go to this event. It's just amazing what people can come up with. There was one guy there that had this nail clippers invention that when you clipped your nails, it actually held the nails in a little compartment. He got so much attention that he actually was on the Tonight Show with Jay Leno. The other neat thing that was there last year was the gentleman that invented the Post-it note was there. And we got to hear about his story. And what really was interesting to me, being a farmer, was that the brothers that invented the Bobcat skid steer loader, it's a piece of equipment that is just almost indispensable on farms this day. Well, they were there and they talked about, how that invention came about and how it developed. And Bobcat now is any skid, there's several companies that make them, but they're all Bobcats. Doesn't matter if it's New Holland, Case, Gale, or whatever. They refer to them as a Bobcat, and they're worldwide. And very encouraged to hear their stories. And these people were both inducted into the Inventors Hall of Fame that night. And I'm no economist, but I did some real rudimentary math on the possibility of the economic impact of this, From the acceptance, the overwhelming acceptance that we've had when we go and demonstrate this chair, we feel that we'll probably be able to sell, once we get up into production, manufacture and sell about 350 wheelchairs a week. And we're thinking right now, like I said, this is very rudimentary, probably about $50 from every wheelchair will go back into the economy, and using that a dollar will turn over five times in the economy. It gives us a figure of what $4,550,000 every year that the economy could be impacted, and it very likely could be a lot more. If you just think of the total population in the country, 1% of them might be in wheelchairs. That's like 30 million people. Not saying we can sell 30 million chairs, but the possibilities are quite large. And without the Inventors Congress, the information that we got there and the confidence that it gave Jerry, that his invention had promise and was something that people really needed, we might not be here. I mean, that chair very well could still be sitting in Jerry's shed out back, With the Inventors Congress, we got lots of leads and lots of help on how to move this product forward. And I would just encourage this committee to, for the few dollars that is being asked, that we fund the Congress so that inventions like this and many others can move forward out into the public and help the state and help people. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to give a brief demonstration.
Sure, we'd love to see it.
This is the first one I did. It's exactly like it did look after 3 hours of working on it. The release levers, if no one's touching this chair, it doesn't move. The regular brakes are off. If you want to move the empty chair, you just push these down. Anybody that's getting in or out, chair don't move until you sit down. As soon as you stand up, it's locked. As soon as you sit down, it's released. This was the first one. This is the same system, only it's been refined, and I'm now offering it on a brand new chair all installed. They take it out of the box, it's ready to use. The difference in this one is we've made lock-offs so that when you want to ambulate a resident of a nursing home, you hold their gate belt and bring the chair along so that if they need to sit down, they can sit down. I didn't want to put a lock-off system on it because it put human error back into it, but I needed one. So what I did was I made it so that it automatically released. As soon as somebody sits in the chair, it's locked again. So it automatically resets. And it doesn't affect holding in a chair. We also are putting silver ions in the powder coating, which kills germs for up to like 15 years. This chair here, that's the jury lock system, the same one there. This chair here has a similar system, but it's an attendant brake that puts the control of this wheelchair in the hands of an attendant when it's needed. In other words, if you have someone that has mental illness, Alzheimer's or anything, you don't want them messing with the other brakes. If you leave them sit, they take the brakes off and wheel around. This one, when you let go of it, the person in the chair can't release these. If you want it so that person can release them, or can use the chair, you just lock them off, and that's right back to the way it was. And then, the other system I have is called incline brake. You have a large person in a chair, a small person pushing them, and they go down an incline, it's very hard to hold them back. With the system on here, it's a lever-action friction brake. Just pull the handles. Same thing, basically, as a bicycle brake. The harder you pull, the tighter the brake goes on.
You've learned a lot about wheelchairs, haven't you?
In a short time. our system, if I took this off this chair, you'd never know it was on there. This clasps over the handlebar, it bolts in existing holes. We don't drill one hole in the chair. I've trademarked, patented my three different brake systems, including my gravity release system. I've trademarked my own name, safety chair, for the chairs, and everything is going extremely well. I'm leaving tomorrow afternoon for MedTrade in Las Vegas. 6 months to the day after I invented this, it was an idea in my head on April 25th, and on October 25th I was in Orlando, Florida, setting up for the biggest MedTrade show in the world. It's come a long ways. And I've worked with very good people. I have virtually started my company with no overhead. So I have friends that are investors. I have a small group of investors, and the people that are building the prototypes and molds and dies to manufacture this, that will be their investment in my company, building these molds and dies. So my company will start off with zero.
Wow.
It's I know we're short time, so appreciate Mr. Chair and representatives for listening.
Thank you for showing us.
Minnesota, correct?
Well, everything is in Minnesota. The only thing that isn't in Minnesota, I get these chairs out of Florida, and they are actually considered made in the United States because they are assembled here. Some of the parts come from overseas, some of them are put here, and they're assembled here. So everything on my part's in Minnesota except the chairs.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great invention.
I'll be quick. Mr. Chair, I'm Julie Rath. I'm a volunteer on the MISC board and also the treasurer, but I'm also the economic development director for the Redwood Area Development Corporation. From my standpoint, this is just a heaven to go to as an economic developer because inventions create jobs. And so when I go to the show, I'm looking for inventions that I know might work with my local manufacturers. And if I see something, I immediately get on the phone and call them and say, the show is going on and you need to come and meet with this person because I think this idea is something that you could add into your product line. And I know a number of my peers who are economic developers in your counties also attend this, so I encourage them to. I've got a cold too, so excuse my voice. So your brochure for this year's event is in the packet. I encourage you highly to come if you've never attended. We've also made a list of just starting from the from the invention to the patent process, the steps that the inventor goes through, and this is all an economic impact because they're talking to patent attorneys, they're coming to our show, they're buying food, they're buying gas, they're working with machine shops, they're developing their prototypes, they're creating a lot of additional income and impact. On the lower half of that sheet, the value to the inventor, why they like coming to the show, I think that's very important. We have a banquet on Saturday night. If you can't come to anything else, come to our banquet. Because these inventors will sell you on what the show does for them. Earlier when we contacted Representative Seifert, he said, well, these are all the questions I'm going to run into. So we made a response to those questions. I just gave you this information for background, too, that you can read through. On the grid sheet, these are just a sampling of the inventions that we've had from 96 forward, and then I did go back and pick out some of the more highlighted ones that have gone further in their production process. But 2 years ago, Joel Matheson, was it 2 years ago?
Yep.
Came to the show with his golf bag. It's just the best thing. And they're from four guys, one's from Otana, Waseca, New Richland, and Albert Lee. And the guy from Albert Lee, I personally ended up knowing who he was. But he was unable to be here this morning, but wanted to be. And he gave me an email testimony of how the MIC helped him, or the four of the guys, move their project forward. And they're going to go into manufacturing very shortly. Also in your packet, I have three websites of different inventions who are now in manufacturing phases, too. This trailer is doing very well. It's the ultimate sportsman advantage. The inventor's from Cokato, but he's going to be working with four manufacturers from Alexandria, Springfield, Cokato, and St. Joseph. And so it's making an impact in those four communities. We earlier mentioned the Bobcat, but Ken Knutson is the inventor, and I'm going to let Raymond share that story because he knows it better than me.
Mr. Chair, Representatives, Kenneth Knutson comes from South Dakota. He invented a tilt tatch. He calls it a tilt tatch. It's an attachment to a skid steer loader. And the invention, the phenomenal aspect of it is that you can tilt the bucket on the skid steer loader. The standard bucket just moves forward and backward, but you can tilt it side to side. It's very helpful for landscaping and construction work. Mr. Knutson told me, and as he told me this story repeatedly, he'd run into a brick wall. He had his patent, he had the design completed, and he could manufacture them himself, but he could only do a few at a time, and he couldn't go anywhere with the invention. He came to the 1995 Minnesota Inventors Congress show, showed the invention, got recognition from the judges, and came away with the grand prize from the show, and the enthusiasm to pursue the project further. He lined up a contact with a manufacturer out of Grove City. So he came from South Dakota to Minnesota and had been manufacturing the product in Minnesota. He says he hit a brick wall, but for the Inventors Congress, he couldn't have gotten there anywhere. And the phenomenal part about that also is that he was able to consult with a number of people, patent attorneys, manufacturers, all without charge at the show, and talk to fellow inventors and get ideas from them and share his thoughts and ideas.
Well, thank you very much. Any questions from the members? We got one more bill to go yet. I think it's Representative Slawick.
Mr. Chair, I just have a quick comment and question. You know, I have a lady who helps me clean my house, and she asked me if I knew a patent attorney, and I was at the Washington County Fair doing political stuff and met a patent attorney and hooked her up with that, and she's right in the middle of all this. And she's writing to Oprah to sell her idea, and I think maybe she should talk to you, huh? That might be a more logical idea, but I think this is very encouraging, and I've never been associated with somebody that's doing this, but it's some of these ideas are really amazing on what could happen, so I'll send her your way.
There you go.
Mr. Chair, I'm all done. I don't know if members knew, but the only four-door convertible made in the United States of America is made in Redwood Falls, Minnesota. I don't think people knew that we had a car manufacturer there, but if possible, I'd like to try to get one of those up on a trailer for members to look at. They are,
and we are going to do that.
They're
going
to try to get it up in front of the Capitol. It's a stunning vehicle. I think they retail for over $100,000. and they are their orders backed up from, they've sold to movie stars or producers, they've sold to wealthy people out of Boston, I think. So, Mr. Chair, you'd be impressed.
Sounds like something a pipe fitter could afford.
Might buy one.
I was just wondering if maybe a grocer could put his golf clubs in the back and start holding them up.
Well, we can work on that later. All in favor of, I renew my motion to have House File 1651 to be included in an omnibus bill. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you very much for your nice presentation.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hamilton.
I'd like to move House File 1126 for possible inclusion.
Possible inclusion on the bill. Okay.
All right.
Bill's been moved.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I appreciate the opportunity to come before you today. I'll keep my comments brief. I do have three individuals here that will testify in favor of the bill. Basically, this is a bill that funds the extended employment for persons with serious mental illness. This bill appropriates funds for the EESMI program by restoring the close to $800,000 in cuts made during the 2003 session and the $940,000 to fund 8 projects, which would have ordinarily been moved from the vocational rehabilitation, which is the state and federal funded program system, to this program. But the funding was not included in the governor's budget. At this time, Mr. Chairman, like I said, I'd like to turn it over to individuals here that are here to testify. We have Sue Abderholden with the National Alliance for the Mental Ill.
Welcome to our committee. Give your name for the records.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Sue Abderholden, and I'm the Executive Director of the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill of Minnesota, and I'm here to speak strongly in support of House File 1126. The President's New Freedom Commission on Mental Health declared that a life in the community for everyone can be realized. And what is a life in the community? A job, a home, and a date on the weekends. Today I want to talk about just one of those jobs. People with mental illness have the highest unemployment rate of any disability group. My national office found in a national survey that 86% of the respondents who had a serious mental illness were of working age, but that 67% were unemployed, and that the majority were living in poverty, with 20% living on less than $5,000 per year. But it's not because they don't want to work. They do. The survey also found that almost all of the people who weren't working wanted to work. But they aren't working because employers don't know how to accommodate their illness and because traditional disability employment programs don't know how to help them obtain, maintain, or advance in jobs. When mental health advocates came to the legislature in 1991 to talk about the lack of appropriate employment programs for people with mental illness, they convinced the legislature to appropriate $100,000 to provide grants to develop innovative employment services. This money was then used as the state match to access federal funds. Under federal VR regs, however, these grant projects are only funded for 4 years. In 1995, the mental health advocates and the League of Women Voters came back to the legislature to ask for funds that would continue these VR-funded projects into the future once federal funds could no longer be used. The program grew for several years until it was cut during the 2003 session. And then the governor's budget does not include funding to restore those cuts, nor does it have funding to continue the 8 VR-funded projects that will reach their 4-year funding limit during the next biennium. NAMI is concerned that DEED is decreasing its commitment to assist people with serious mental illness to find and keep jobs. They seem to believe that extended employment for people with serious mental illness is about social work, not about jobs. This could not be farther from the truth. Supported employment, which is what is provided through the EESMI program, is an evidence-based program that produces successful outcomes, those outcomes being jobs. The key ingredients are competitive employment, the consumer decides when she or he wants to begin employment, rapid job search, integration with mental health treatment, attention to consumer preferences, benefits counseling, and time unlimited and individualized support. What EESMI does is recognize that people need real jobs in the real workforce. It recognizes the unique supports that are needed for people with mental illness in order to work. It recognizes that work is therapeutic and that we don't have to wait until someone is cured. It recognizes that people with mental illness often have college or graduate degrees. It recognizes that people with mental illness need access to health insurance and treatment in order to work. And it recognizes the cyclical nature of mental illness and that while people might need help, might not need help today, they may need help in 6 months. And it also recognizes that employers haven't a clue on how to make job accommodations or to support employees who have a mental illness, and so they educate them about mental illness and address the incredible stigma that surrounds it. I would like to ask how many of these other programs can produce the outcomes we see under the EESMI program, or how many of the other job practices use evidence-based practices and research. In a time of budget constraints, we need to fund what works, while the EESMI program works. If you do not increase the funding, we will lose the projects located in West St. Paul, Thief River Falls, Minneapolis, Winona, Rochester, Lindstrom, Little Falls, and Red Wing. If you don't restore the funding that was cut during the last biennium, people with mental illness will continue to lose their employment supports. You can't recover from a serious mental illness by sitting at home alone every day, smoking cigarettes, and watching TV. We all need a reason to get up in the morning. We all need meaning in our lives. We all need to develop relationships with other people. We all need a paycheck to live on. Every week I hear of new people who've been newly diagnosed with a serious mental illness who do not want to apply for SSI or SSDI. Why? Because they want to go back to work. Do not continue to support these decisions to ignore the effectiveness of this program to allow it to slowly disintegrate. They may not believe that people with mental illness are worth providing job supports to, but we do. NAMI, for one, believes that investing in the EESMI program, investing in the future of people with mental illness, will produce an excellent return. And I urge your support for this bill.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, we have a second testifier. The Melinda Champ from Rise in Minneapolis.
Welcome to the committee.
Hi, I'm Melinda Champ with Rise Incorporated. Can you hear me?
I can hear you very well.
Good. I thought that this was going to occur on April 1st, so I'd like to apologize for the typo, which reads HF 1034 and should read 1126. Rise Incorporated is a member of MACRO, and we do support 1034 as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, joke's on me. I'd like to start by citing Dr. Patricia Deegan, who is a renowned national researcher in the area of mental health, and looking at consumers' supports and their role in recovery. What she said was, "We people with mental illnesses are here to live a life, not a diagnosis. Oftentimes what happens in our world is that we tend to compartmentalize people and put them away. Even though our regional treatment centers aren't as large as they used to be, we have ways of putting people aside in our communities. And with the efforts of employment, we engage people actively in meaningful roles and functions within our communities, thereby reducing discrimination and stigma across the board. And this is important because one out of every five Americans is diagnosed with a mental illness. That's a lot of people who could be working or are working. I gave you a packet which outlines some of our beliefs as a community rehabilitation provider. We believe in supporting people with disabilities and other barriers to employment in attaining their personal measure of vocational achievement, self-sufficiency, and belonging in their communities. And we as RISE are dedicated to building a community more accepting of all of its citizens. Our mission drives our services. As Sue cited, people have certain things that they are looking for in their lives just like everybody else. And I'm going to concentrate on employment and what we look at providing for people so that they are getting on with their lives. In 2004, RISE served 2,523 participants. Of that, mental illnesses accounts for over 1,800 people, which is more than 50% of the individuals that we serve throughout an 11-county-plus area in Minnesota. Of that group, 2,832 people come to our door in 2004 seeking employment services. This shows that people want to work. Of that, we were looking at how many people had mental illnesses, and that came to 1,214 people.
So we have a variety of people that we're dealing with. Many people have multiple types of disabilities. It isn't just one category. The other piece about how we did in 2004 is that I went to look at our support employment programs, which is looking at evidence-based practices as it relates to supported employment, and where people are engaged in extended employment service funding. Of that, we have 495 people working. Of the 495, 423 are placed in individual jobs within the community, where they are hired by an employer to produce a certain service or complete their own tasks. It's in competitive wage jobs. People are earning an average of $9.56 an hour over the course of all these services, and they work over 28 hours a week on average. We also provide some other models of support services, of which individuals with serious and persistent mental illnesses are employed, using a group model called an enclave. We have only 72 people engaged in those types of model supports. And you can compare how much more earning power a person has in an individual job versus a group work kind of position. You can see that the number of hours that they may be working is less. And they're earning $6.19 on average an hour. And that's across rural, urban, metro, and regional metro offices. But together, we have a total annualized wage of all of these participants earning over $6 million in wages. How do we do this? What we choose to do in relation to our mission is that we look at employment services offered that are specific and strategically chosen with the individual as an active partner in the development and delivery of employment services. For your benefit, in your packet, there's a yellow page handout that looks at what are the tenets of evidence-based practices as it relates to mental health services, and what are the six core principles that have been found and targeted through research as it relates to the effectiveness of supported employment. What makes extended employment services to this group paramount to us is that we get the ability to practice cutting-edge processes with people that are really giving us great results in our communities. I won't go through all of them now. I think Sue did that very well, but I think you should know what they are. If you're hearing that phrase as it relates to supported employment, you'll have those core principles in front of you. Because it was such a lovely day yesterday, and people are working, our consumers were not able to join us today because they'd have to call in sick or give short notice and, you know, get points at work, which is not a good thing. So what we chose to do is give you a synopsis of three people that are actively involved in our programs. I'm going to start by describing a gentleman. His name is Richard. He has schizophrenia with catatonic features. He's had multiple hospitalizations, and he has a PhD, and we've been able to assist him in regaining employment within his field of endeavor as a process engineer. Doris Ilias is our program coordinator out of our St. Cloud office, known as Central Minnesota Works, and she also will be she's going to talk about two people that are working within the St. Cloud area as well. So I'm going to start about Richard. This is your pink handout.
We got about 4 minutes.
Okay, I'll talk really fast and skip over the highlights.
They might have a question to ask, too.
Okay, I can do that. Okay, so as you go through the first page, this is going to give you a narrative of how things unfolded for Richard and what his background was. He's associated with Creating Access, which is one of the programs that will not be funded as of June 30th.
Just because of federal cut?
Because of the state funding cuts to the programs. It's one of the four programs this year that will not be funded. So the second page gives you a service and cost profile of what we did with Richard, along with the types of services that were rendered on a one-to-one basis using our relationship with Richard and with the employers that he is working with. Creating Access proved to be very critical for Richard. When we met him, he was in a day treatment program through Hennepin County Medical Center, known as William Jepson Day Treatment. And he hadn't worked in a long time, and he had never worked following grad school in achieving his doctorate degree within his field of endeavor.
So what we did was we took a look at using Creating Access because at that point there was a very long waiting list for short-term services through rehab services. So we felt that this would be a good use of money to get him back on track and get him going again. And this breaks all that down for you in the right under funding and costs. He started his new job in September 2004, about a month after we met with him. He started at $13 an hour, and he was working full-time, and he was eligible for benefits. What had happened is Richard had a history of keeping a job for like 3 to 6 months, and then he would lose that. He felt it was associated with boredom, and he needed to be challenged and stimulated. Mm-hmm. So when he came to us in November saying he'd like to get a different job, we went with him on that. This will give you a breakdown in terms of the costs further. And what we did was we had to make a decision once he was settled into his new position where he was earning more money that we had to enter him into EE Basic because we do not have access to the specialized services EESMI would be providing for Richard. Of importance with the EESMI is that it allows us to do rapid job search or replacement if the person is laid off, if for some reason their disability is escalating and they need to return into a hospital situation, all of that. So that gives you a breakdown. I'm done talking really fast. I'm going to turn it over to Dora.
You are a very good talk.
Thank you very much.
Please give your name for the record.
I'm Doris Lilias, and as Melinda said, I am the project coordinator in St. Cloud, and we serve Central Minnesota. And to keep this really short, and I know the time, I did include stories of Angela and Trudy, and both of those individuals would have liked to have been here. Trudy would have had to come from Sock Center and meet me in my office at 6 a.m. Well, who's going to happen? If you had wanted to talk to them, I'm sure that either one of them would be more than happy to talk to you. I just wanted to reiterate the things that you've heard, that these grants are really flexible. They allow us, and I do have a casebook, to work with individuals where they are, for what services they need that are tailored to them. We meet with employers. It's very individualized, very flexible. These grants I've worked in since 97 in St. Cloud, and although we're seeing decreases in their funding, we're seeing increases in the people who really need these grants.
Thank you. Any questions from members? Seeing none. Do you have a question? Okay. Representative Westerberg, renews his motion.
Mr. Chair, can I?
Yeah, Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chair, just a quick one. There's a lot of similarities to Representative Graffalo's bill. It sounds like, is the monies that, are we talking about the same sort of pot of money here?
No.
One?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bradley, no, it's a different pot of money because this money only serves people with a serious mental illness, and even the way that it's funded to the projects is different because the flexibility that's needed and the individualized attention isn't there under the other program.
Mr. Chair, I read the material, and it did say serious mental illness in the other proposal as well. But I'm not denying how important it is. I'm just trying to figure out we can follow up with that.
The EE programs are several of them, and some of the funding comes from the Workforce Development Funds, other general funds. So there's how many different EE cutouts are there out of the Workforce Development Funds? Anybody know that? Miss
Colin, someone.
How many EE cutouts out of the Workforce Development Funds are there, and for what purposes are we using that money, and how is it normally funded?
Mr. Chair, while Mr. Sherman is coming to the table, some of the materials that were handed out during Representative Graffalo's bill were meant for this particular bill, so we might miss some crossover.
Could be,
Mr. Chair? Mr. Chair, can I just ask a brief question of you? This comes down to, it's hard for us to understand what the pots are and where stuff happens and when we're going to see the budgeting. And, sure, just a brief question. Are targets going to be set soon? Are we going to see a budget soon about this?
I'm looking forward to them as much as you are.
Okay, because we get mixed up in the process, too. I mean, I can't distinguish which pot is which, and hopefully this won't get lost. It's very important.
I agree. Can you kind of describe how the EE funding for various things are and how they come out of the Workforce Development Fund as well as other funds?
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is John Sherman. I'm Extended Employment Program Specialist with Rehab Services. there are three separate funds that the legislature has appropriated, three separate projects. The first is the fund that was spoken of earlier today, which internally we call EE Basic. It is a covers, it's not disability specific. Representative Bradley had asked a question about individuals with serious mental illness. They are also served in that program approximately, I'm doing this off the top of my head, but approximately 40% of the individuals in that program have some diagnosis of mental illness. In that program, we really are looking at individuals who have an impairment to employment because of the disability. That program receives both general funds and workforce development funds. The preponderance of the dollars are workforce development funds right now. That change came, I believe, 4 years ago. Representative Soderberg will correct me if I'm wrong. Sorry, Mr. Soderberg will correct me if I'm wrong. The second program that we're...
Say a lot more than we do.
Sorry, Ron. The second program, which we are speaking of here, is purely general fund dollars and is targeted and has a different set of flexibility. And it's been supporting a series of what we've called employability projects as they've grown over the last decade. And it is a very specific set of outcomes of employment in the community. It's a little bit... It's a bit more specialized because of the needs of the population. The last, which you will, you've already had passed through, is the Minnesota Employment Center for Deaf of Hard of Hearing, which is a small appropriation and is mostly general funds, but I believe has $25,000 of workforce development funds.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate it. I just wanted to point out there are several extended employment things. With that, Representative Westenberg renews his motion to have House File 1126 be potentially laid over for an omnibus bill. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. We are adjourned.
Thank you. Yeah. Oh,